Hello, everyone. I'm Robbie Norman, and this is the Serial Fanaticist, a podcast for fans of everything. Welcome. Andrew Bloom is here to talk about the Mountain Goats. More to the point, about their new album, Bleed Out. We last convened about John Darnielle and his compatriots 5 years ago, and enough time has passed that it felt right for another discussion. We go track by track, talk about what works, what doesn't, and what that says about us, the Mountain Goats, and music in general. It was a great chat. Had a lot of fun talking with Andrew, as always. On to the show. Hello, everyone. I am here with Andrew Bloom of theandrewblog.net and many, many places on the internet. Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Robbie, and I didn't expect us to circle back to 80s action movies in this specific way, but I'm glad we got the chance to do it.
Yeah, I suppose. Although, okay, we'll get to it. We're going to get to theme about this record. We have returned to talk about the Mountain Goats. This is Serial Fanaticist. It was an emergency. Emergency impromptu podcast because Mountain Goats have a new record out. And Andrew and I last discussed a Mountain Goats record, Goths. We did a Goths podcast 5 years ago.
Several albums ago.
Yeah, a bunch of Mountain Goats albums, four, I believe, actual albums, plus a bunch of live things. And yeah, there's League in League with Dragons, Getting Into Knives, Dark in Here, and now Bleed Out, plus Songs for Pierre Chauvin, whatever you want to qualify that as. I guess that qualifies as a real album.
Yeah, it's a real album. It's real songs. He's played them at real concerts.
I know, but then I don't know. It's very different than it's not produced the same. I don't know. Again, it's the Mountain Goats, so it's John Darnielle, and he and they do weird stuff all the time, and so it's sometimes hard to quantify. But since Gosser's been in League with Dragons, Songs for Pierre Chauvin, Getting Into Knives, Dark in Here, plus the Jordan Lake Sessions, and now we are here with Bleed Out, the latest. Not that Andrew and I haven't had thoughts about the Mountain Goats in those intervening 5 years, because we have texted back and forth quite a bit.
It's true. We have protected our thoughts until we could bundle them with the appropriate amount of time and the appropriate amount of care for a listening audience.
I don't know if that's true. I think this is the first album where it wouldn't just be an hour of us complaining. I think that's really what it is. And I think it's a good place to check back in with the Mountain Goats, because we have, I will say, that I didn't particularly enjoy Goths that much, which you can hear in that podcast. I ended up being like, I didn't like it. It's not for me, but I support John Darnielle doing what he wants. He is a, you know, eminent singer-songwriter. And if he wants to do a weird album about Goths and I don't like, and it's jazzy and I don't really like most of the songs, that's fine. He's going to do that. And then he continued to do that for four more albums.
I want to go on record here. To your point, I think Songs for Pierre Chauvin is a different animal and an animal that I like a little better. But I agree with you for the other albums. It is more of the kind of thing that Goths offers. Try to say Goths offers 10 times fast.
Goths offers.
Everlasting Gobstoppers, whatever the name of the album is. It is more of that rather than, hey, maybe he's going to go into this genre for a little while. Maybe he's going to go somewhere else. Nope. This is where he has parked, and this is where he seemed poised to stay for at least some time.
I feel like Bleed Out, I'm more bullish on in general. I feel like there's enough in here for me to go, I will listen to this again. I have literally not listened. Today, after we decided to record this podcast, I went back and listened to a lot of Mountain Goats songs over the years, like old stuff, lesser but still old stuff, and then stuff from the recent past that I don't like, just to remind myself, I still don't like this, right? Nope, still don't. Still don't like goths, really. Don't like In League with Dragons. Getting into Knives or Dark in here, not really either. Aside from an occasional, like, there's, you know, one track, maybe two tracks. But an album that has 12 tracks on it, if I like one song off of it, I don't like that album. I think that's fair criticism.
I would agree with that. Though I will say this, in the rearview mirror, Goss looks better and better. Like, I don't love that album, and it definitely marks a departure from what existed previously. But I think I like more songs on that album than probably the other, you know, full-fledged studio albums that have come out since then. So it's one of those be careful what you wish for or be grateful for what you have, because you never know what's going to come next sort of deals.
So Bleed Out, they've been releasing, they released three singles up in the build up to the release. And much like I alluded to, we've been texting back and forth, and I'm like, Andrew, and the first single comes out, which is, I believe, Training Montage. And I go, Andrew, this is good. What's happening? Are we getting good mountain goats again? Is this what's going to happen? Do I have hope? Is this Shawshank Redemption? Hope is the best of things. Is that what's happening here? And then the second single comes out. I go, oh, wait, 2 for 2. I like both these songs. Mm-hmm. And then the third single comes out, and I go, 3 for 3. They're not all the same song, and they're certainly not, oh, this is just the same, like, old Mountain Goats. But it is songs I like. Songs with like vim and vigor, and they feel like they have energy. They are, like, driving. They are, dare I say, rock music.
I think that's fair.
Which is, I think, a part of the Mountain Goats, certainly indie rock, but they are rock music. That is what I think of when I think of the Mountain Goats. I think of indie rock, which rock is about half of that, if not more. And then the album came out, what, last week, right? Proper, fully released?
Yeah. I believe it was August 19th, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, 10 days from the 10 days prior to the day they were recording this, and I have not yet listened to the whole thing. I wanted to give it due diligence. I didn't want to just listen in passing. I wanted to listen to it, so I hadn't listened to it all the way through. I'd gotten about halfway, and then you text me and said that John Darnielle has sold you a bill of goods.
That is accurate. I think that's a not unfair reaction, because tell me if you think I'm wrong, Robbie. I don't think the three singles are representative of the rest of the album. If anything, they feel like three songs from an entirely different album. But for what I understand why he put them out. They're three of the best songs. I would say there's, you know, one other song on the album that I really like, but otherwise those would be my top three. So whoever is choosing these things, whether it's John or the other members of the band or the label or whatever, they know what good is, but why doesn't the rest of the album sound like that, Robbie?
Now that I've listened to the whole album multiple times now, I mean, I do agree that those songs are not representative of the rest of the album. But that raises maybe the first of many questions I will raise today in this podcast. There's probably a lot of waffling about how this actually works, because I honestly have no idea how singles are decided upon. Is it just the record company goes, these are the best ones, we release these. These are going to sell the most records. These are going to sell the most pre-orders. So these are the ones that get released. John Darnielle, we don't care what you think. These are the ones that are going to be singles. Does John decide? Does the band decide? Does John and the band decide? I don't know. Is it fair to say, oh, these singles aren't like the rest of the album, therefore I have been cheated?
I don't know. Well, so going with the first question or the first inquiry here, John commented on his own podcast, I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats, that the studio and the label makes recommendations to him and says at the end of the day, how you arrange the track listing, which singles you want to release, at the end of the day, that is up to you. That is your creative decision. But we would advise these things because we think this is what's going to be the most beneficial, the most commercial, the most artistically successful, so forth and so on. So it sounds like it is a joint decision, or at least it is John gets to be the decider, but somebody else gets input that is taken or not taken. As to the question, is it fair to feel cheated if the three singles that you get are not like the rest of the album? Cheated is probably too strong of a word. I do feel like it's reasonable to be disappointed. It's reasonable to say, hey, I've gotten these things. I like them. They're good. I'm glad you're doing this. Do more of this. This is a, if not a promise, then certainly a suggestion that this is the kind of thing you're doing on the album. And you know what? If you get one single and it's like that, and the second single is a little bit different, and the third single is a little bit different still, then hey, you know, that's, I think that gives people some room to run. Not, you know, it doesn't have to be a collage necessarily. You can have themes and commonality. But I would say for the most part, the albums we have gotten in recent years have commonalities in terms of the sound, in terms of the themes, in terms of those sorts of things. So I don't think it's unreasonable to walk in with the expectation that based on the singles you've heard, the rest of the album is going to be of a piece with them in some way, shape, or form. And I think you could make that argument for Bleed Out. There is a theme here. There are a lot of songs about people in desperate action-y situations, people who are making challenges or threats to others. So I don't think you can say there's an entire disunity, but it does sort of feel like you have those first three songs that came out of something else and are packed in with whatever anything, whatever John and Matt and Peter and John Worster were doing when they decided to put this album together, whether or not it fit with everything else. What do you think, Robbie? Is it fair? Did I have unreasonable expectations here?
I mean, here, I will say this. As someone who has skin in the game, because I pre-ordered the vinyl off the strength of those singles, I went, you know what? I haven't bought a Mountain Goats record in years because I don't like them very much. And I went, oh, these singles are good enough for me to buy this record. You know, I haven't heard the rest of it. I want the nice, fancy pre-order vinyl that has the cool colors on. I am a person, I don't care really, but in my small vinyl collection, I do not care about editions or printings. I do care about cool colors of the records. So when I watch the play, I like to see the colors swirls and whatever. I like to see them spin around. It's fun. So I put my money down and I pre-order the record. And so it does. I think there is obviously the incentive is, oh, we want to pre-order. We want to sell some records. And if we put our best foot forward, the poppy, hooky, catchy, driving rock songs up front with the singles, maybe we'll sell a few extras. It worked on me. Do I feel cheated? No, because I didn't really expect to like every song on this record. I had tempered my expectations pretty hard, even despite the singles being really good. And I think I still have my money's worth of this record, even if I don't like all the songs, or even maybe not even most of the songs. I don't know. But I do think it is fair to go, hey, man, like the rest of this record is more like goths than it is than it is like Tallahassee or Sunset Tree or something like that. That's just my first thought, Andrew. Do you want to go track by track and we can break stuff down a little bit?
I'm totally up for that.
Okay. I think that's what we're going to go track by track. There's not a lot of tracks on this record. 10, 11, 12, 12 track, 12 tracks. We probably won't spend a lot of time on any particular one. And then we'll kind of, I have thoughts more about as Mountain Goats as a whole too, but I think the tracks will elucidate and pull out some more discussion anyway. And the album starts with those three singles. The first one is Training Montage, which you compare to Blink-182.
It does. You know, Blink-182 is my touchstone because I think that was one of the big bands when I was coming of age. But it does have sort of a late 90s, early aughts pop punk sound to it. And I think a lot of the sound in those first three tracks owes something to that era. I don't know if that's what John was going for specifically. I imagine if you talked to him, he would reference some very rich 70s band that he's pulling something from here. But that was at least what jumped out in my mind. There's an upbeat, an anthemic quality. There's a repetitious chorus. It's hard to put your finger on, but I think the first one in particular seems of that era to me.
I don't necessarily get Blink 182 from it. I really like all these first three tracks. Training Montage is good, and I think it is anthemic. I think that word is a really good word. Good as is, it is like, oh, this is a song we'll play. The crowd will shout the chorus with us. You know, they will yell along with us. And it does. I think there is a. I think there's just a certain part of me that just says John Darnielle not. And this is the thing we're going to be touching on a lot. I think I'm going to be touching on a lot is John Darnielle's vocal deliveries and his affectations that he's picked up along the years. Probably on purpose. I presume that he does it on purpose. I don't like it, but I do think he does it on purpose where he is in going back. I went back and I listened to all the, I listened to one or two songs from this album, moving on, starting back in the Boombox years, which I'm not the hugest fan of the Boombox years. I can respect it, but I'm much more like, oh, the 2000s records are all great. Honestly, I would say all of them are good to great, from beginning to end, where the production picks up and John has sometimes is just him and a guitar, but sometimes is more band members. I think they're varied and all good and have lots of different kinds of music, but all of them deliver what I think of as the Mountain Goats. But even those albums, John Darnielle is, I don't know, yell. They call him shout. Like, I've heard read interviews with him where he's like, people are like, oh, you're shouting again. I'm like, I wouldn't really call it shouting, but it is like unreserved, earnest singing. And there's like a certain, it's not as measured. It's more raw, his vocal delivery in this song. And the first few songs, the singles. And I'm just happy that happens at all, honestly. The big kind of like shouting chorus, it has that. I wouldn't say Blink-182, but I don't really know who else I would say. So I was trying to do that practice of like, as I was going through the songs, I'm like trying to think of comparison bands. I would go, who's this? Who does this remind me of? And this is a more modern punk pop punk band, Rise Against.
Sure, I think, can see that. I think there's definitely some of that same energy.
Like modern Rise Against, not early Rise Against. Early Rise Against is more of a hardcore band, but modern Rise Against, which is effectively a rock band, I think that's what this reminds me of. Any other thoughts before we move on?
No, I would just say I appreciate the same unvarnished, unrefined energy that Darnielle brings to the vocals here. And I think you're right. I think that was what drew a lot of people to the Mountain Goats in the first place, particularly in that boombox era. Even if it wasn't polished, there was something that felt very authentic about it. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend that songs about getting revenge or leaving a mark on people are the most authentic or lived in human emotions that you're going to get in a song. But I do think something about the presentation marks as real and connectable in a way that's harder with some of the more constructed vocals and constructed tunes that are on the album and in the more recent Mountain Goats oeuvre as well.
I mean, I think overall the whole album, you know, following the action movie, like John says, when I was writing these music, I was watching 60s, 70s, 80s action movies, you know, and I feel like there is some kind of meta narrative going on here where how these songs are supposed to be, these themes are supposed to be relatable, despite the fact that most people do not engage with action movie stories in their lives. You don't get revenge. You know, you don't have big shootouts. You don't go have knife fights with people. No one lives action movies. They're escapist fantasy, but yet we connect to them in some way. And I think that is an interesting idea that resurfaces thematically in multiple of these songs that I think only works sometimes. I think it works well in this one. Mark on you. Number two.
So my thought on this one is this is the spiritual cousin to Foreign Object, at least thematically. Something about the I am going to take this thing and hurt you is a commonality between that track off of Beat the Champ and this one off of Bleed Out. And again, it's feels very much of a piece with the prior track in terms of its sound. I like it a lot. It grows on me. As we said about the last one, it's anthemic. It has a lot of that sort of repetition, the kind of thing you feel like you could chant and rock out to a crowd. And you can tell some of these songs, and you can find this on a lot of the Mountain Goats albums, you know, what John is trying to do for a you're going to sit and listen to this in your living room track versus no, I need something that's going to get the crowd pumped up live. This is going to be high energy. This is going to get people swinging in their seats as they listen to this. This is definitely the latter. And I appreciate that. I feel like those kinds of songs on this album stand out better than, you know, as I was saying earlier, some of the more Baroque Byzantine tracks that have a lot of, you know, more esoteric instrumentation and a little more production than something like this.
I like this song. I think it's my third of the three singles. This is number three for me. But I'm listening again. It's like, this is Dashboard Confessional. This feels like emo to me. This feels like the stuff my sister listened to in high school. I didn't like Dashboard at the time, or, you know, Death Cab or whatever. Any your emo band of choice in the mid 2000s, but nowadays, I'm perfectly fine listening to that stuff, and that's what this reminds me of. This makes me think of, like, yeah, there's pop-punk stuff in it, but it's also, like, that emo, which is obviously, there are connections between those two genres. It has that kind of, and it's not, I don't know, I think it makes that kind of emo connection makes a certain kind of sense, because those songs, emo bands are generally just super earnest music, and that's what I think of when I think of John Darnielle and the Mountain Goats. I think of earnestness. So it makes sense.
That's fair.
It says female backing vocals too, which I wanted to just, I was like trying to make it notes of like instrumentation and like little tinges of like different, like it doesn't mean much if you just listen to the singles. You're like, oh, they're not different from each other. But as you go through the album, some of these songs are very different from the other songs. And I'm like, wait a minute, this one has this and that. I would also like to mention that Training Montage has strings in it, like I think like cello or bass, like bowed strings in there. And also there's the odd thing about Training Montage I didn't mention, there's like dissonant guitars at the end, like the last 30 seconds are just dissonance. And it's a little, it's kind of contrary to what the song largely is. It was a hook-driven kind of anthemic rock. Mark and You is good. I like Mark and You too. I would like, again, these singles sold this album to me. I even went, here, Andrew, I did this at the end of every single song. I said thumbs up or thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
So thumbs up, two thumbs up so far.
Two thumbs up. Yeah. Highly recommended.
Yeah, thumbs up for Training Montage, thumbs up for Mark on You. And the third song, third track, also the another single, Wage Wars Get Rich, Die Handsome.
I will say for Wage Wars Get Rich, Die Handsome, it is probably the most memeable of the Mountain Goats tracks on this one. I feel like I've seen it memed a lot of places out there. So, you know, you gotta give something to the internet nerds like myself. But you know, this feels a lot like, in a weird way, a throwback to some of that boombox era Mountain Goats. That was, you know, short songs, up tempo. I think I used the phrase quick and dirty previously. But it's just, it's a lot of fun. And I think as you get through these three tracks in the album, I don't think there's necessarily the kind of lyrical depth or incisiveness that you tend to expect from a Mountain Goats album, or at least that I tend to expect from a Mountain Goats album. But these songs are a lot of fun. I don't know if you feel that way, Robbie, but it's easy to sort of like laugh at some of the arch lyrics and appreciate the kind of rousing energy that they present, even if it's not necessarily as piercing or insightful, which is just one of those things that John Darnielle and his group brings to the table. But it's, you know, it's a good time. There's still clever rhymes. There's still good turns of phrase in there. The In a World of Heavy Footprints, Be Untraceable is one that stuck with me. But it's something that I feel like, again, if you played this live, the entire audience is going to be rocking and rolling with you, which is all you can ask for, at least for an album that seemed to present itself along those lines.
This is my favorite track. Yes, it is. It does not deep by any stretch of the imagination. I don't care so much. This is like Mountain Goats doing Bad Religion to me. That's what this feels like. This feels like a Bad Religion song sung by the Mountain Goats. It is short. It's 2 minutes long. It is not deep. You know, it's not like there's not again, it is like, yeah, we're just, this is a song you yell along to with a crowd. And it's relatively simple, instrumentally, with some fun little guitar licks thrown in along the edges. But again, simple. And I am fine with that. Honestly, and I like, if the whole album was this, maybe I wouldn't feel that same way. Maybe I go, okay, I don't need every song to be Mountain Goats doing a punk song. But maybe I would. I don't know. Maybe I would like a whole punk album from the Mountain Goats. Considering I like these three songs, and if they kept going, I would go, oh, maybe this is what I want from the Mountain Goats at this point. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, more deeper lyrically and have more complex instrumentation and all that stuff. Like, I'm fine with punk music by the Mountain Goats, maybe. So thumbs all the way up for Wage Wars, Get Rich, Die Handsome. And frankly, I think the other thing, Andrew, that I really do like, I appreciate about this is, and I think one of the things I've been so disappointed about the last four records or plus of the Mountain Goats is they've all been in the wake of the Trump years, the Trump presidency and the pandemic, you know, rough times. And I was just, I kept expecting, like, and I follow John on Twitter. He's a good follow. He's very smart, very clever, very funny. If you don't mind his Magic the Gathering takes, which sometimes do bother me, but I'm like, he's you know, every single day was talking about politics and about, you know, empathy and people. And I'm like, are we going to get that? Like, it feels like, oh, he's angry about this stuff. Are we not going to get music about it? Are we not going to get any of that anger channeled into meaningful music, critiquing, talking about culture, about society, about politics? No, not at all. Honestly, zero, like not, almost nothing, really. Like, it's, if it is, it's very esoteric and obtuse. And I think this song, where it's called Wage Wars, Get Rich, Die Handsome, is just like, okay, yeah, it's like direct and to the point. I've been wanting that, like, get to the point. Like a punch to the throat kind of thing. Okay, so
and I'll say this. I do think, to your point, John Darnielle has injected a lot of that stuff into the last four albums, but he does do it in a more esoteric and abstract kind of way, which I don't think is necessarily out of step for what he has done previously. Like, you know, what a Sicilian Crest, that I think is supposed to be at least partly a political song, but it is hard to approach on those terms because, to your point, it is not especially direct about it. And I appreciate a lot of the indirectness of John Darnielle sometimes. I think he can get to really profound things from not coming directly at them. But at the same time, it is nice to have a song called Wage Wars, Get Rich, Die Handsome. And you know what it's about? Waging wars, getting rich, and dying handsome. And every once in a while, that's enough.
So we go from my favorite song. And then we get Extraction Point, which is my least favorite song. By maybe quite a wide margin. I really, really, really do not like Extraction Point. Saxophone. Andrew. Saxophone. What?
You gotta chase that Kenny G magic.
Why? Okay? I mean... Who? They don't. I don't want it. Stop. Please stop with the saxophone. I don't want it in a Mountain Goat song. There are zero Mountain Goat songs that have saxophone in them. I go, you know what? That would be better if it was a guitar part. It would be. Every single one. Everyone, if it was just a guitar part playing the same music, I would go, okay, yeah, that's better. Or a keyboard part or any other instrument. Why? We want this loud, brassy, obnoxious instrument in my... an Extraction Point itself. It feels like... It feels like the album falls off a cliff.
It absolutely feels like something they threw in from a different album. And I don't, you know, I think I appreciate the willingness to experiment. I appreciate the willingness to try different instrumentation and make it work and let the sound evolve in some way. But I think our generation, if nothing else, associates that sound with easy listening Muzak. It's very, very hard, at least for me, to disassociate myself from that. So when you go from the up-tempo, punk rock-infused Wage Wars, Get Rich, Die Handsome, and all of a sudden there's this gooey, I don't want to say inauthentic, but just very cheesy to me, saxophone riff that just floats off the top of everything that is going on here. It is so hard to take it seriously for me, and so hard to connect with what the song is trying to do. You know, I mentioned Sicilian Crest just a second ago, and I feel like we've had an unfortunate balance of Mountain Goat songs in the last few years that sound like they could be 80s theme songs for like sitcoms, like Step by Step or something like that. And I don't know. It's not good, man. It is not good.
No, this song feels like, and maybe this was the intent, the song largely feels like it should be on a soundtrack. Like, this is backing music. This is not a song to consume by alone. It is a song you consume with visuals. Like, it felt like to me a movie I hate, Drive. It feels like something that belongs in that kind of a neo-noir film, something like along those lines.
Yep.
And if it was some, like, you know, an action hero protagonist driving a car to go kill someone, and this song is playing while he's driving with an earnest, angry look on his face, blood, probably a blood stain dripping down his head, I would go, okay, that's fine. I wouldn't think about it. But consuming it on its own, it feels weirdly out of place. There isn't a mention of the Kennedy Expressway in Tampa, so I give it a small check mark because it's a road I've driven on in real life. So I go, oh yes, thank you, John Darnielle. You referenced something I know in my life. But this is the first appearance of the John Darnielle vocals that I cannot stand. That make me not like it, where it, he's like trying, I don't, has he ever talked about this? Like, this, it's obviously a clear choice on his part where he's just like, it feels like he is afraid of his own voice or something. Like,
so when he was, sorry, go ahead.
No, Rob. No. You answer me, please, Andrew.
So when he was doing the season of I Only Listen to the Mountain Goats that talked about the album Goths, he mentioned particularly trying to do a different method of singing. That I think he had taken some voice lessons. I think he had worked with some people and wanted to have, if not a more professional sound, then a more polished sound. He wanted to do something a little more traditional, a little more in line with not just his usual raw utterances, but something that fit a very particular vocal tone and quality that he wanted to achieve for that. And I think he has stuck with that approach to some extent on the albums that have come down since. So I think it is a conscious choice. I don't think he's afraid of his voice. I think he has done things a particular way for a long time and wanted to challenge himself to do something in a different mode or method.
Okay. I mean, I'm not necessarily, that's what it sounds like at first. Listen, most of the time it just feels like, you know, the words escape, like he doesn't hold words, he doesn't hold lyrics, like he doesn't have a note even. I'm not trying to be dismissive of, you know, he's afraid of his own voice, but it is, and that makes perfect sense what you just said, where he's like, oh, he had you know, voice training and stuff like that. It's like, and I think that really hews down to a lot, something I have a problem with these more recent albums. John Darnielle is trying to sound good.
Aren't we all, Robbie?
No, we're not. No, I in particular, and this is just personal taste, I in particular I like rawness. I like an edge. I like even sometimes I even like rough or production like value. I like some of that boombox hiss, maybe just a little bit, just a tiny smidge of it, a little bit of less sanding off the edges of notes, some messy guitar licks, some messy distortion, and clearly I'm a big metalhead. I like harsh vocals. I like people screaming and growling and sounding like goats and demons. I listen to music for fun all the time. And what one of the things that initially appealed to me when my now wife, then girlfriend, played the Mountain Goats for me for the first time, she's like, I really like the Mountain Goats. And I listened to it, and I was more firmly just a metalhead at that time. I didn't listen to indie rock. I didn't listen to most other types of music. But John Darnielle got to me right away. I understood it because his voice wasn't nice. It's nasally, and he didn't care. He still belted out his songs. Like, and you already alluded to it, like there's a kind of a joy of even those early boombox days, is this is a dude just belting his heart out about, you know, with very poetic, incredible lyrics. And maybe his voice isn't perfect, but who cares? You know, like, you want to make the comparison. Bob Dylan, obviously. Like, hey, Bob Dylan's voice never was good, but who cares? You know, like Lemmy from Motorhead. Like, Ozzy. Like, there's just so many iconic vocalists over the years. Voices weren't really good, but who cares? Because they knew how to use what they had to the best of their abilities and deliver their heart. And this feels like, and I think that puts a pretty much a fine point on it. It's like, no, John Daniel wants to be a good singer. So he's going to be his best to be a quote unquote good singer. And I feel like in this first three singles, there's less of that. It feels more of just like, oh, these are punk songs. No one cares. No one cares if you're a good vocal, like Blink-182. Were they good vocalists? No, most punk vocalists aren't good. The Ramones. Do you care if they can't sing? No, you don't care. They're still great. But then you get to this song, which is strange. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't know what genre I would describe. Like, this feels like it feels like a weird mix of like new wave or what, jazz with saxophone, but there's also like weird synth stuff going on in the background. I don't know what it is. I don't like it. I think that's very clear. I do not like Extraction Point. I think the bright spot about it is by far the song I like the least, and there's no other song that approaches it on this album. Every other song, I'm like, it's, even the songs I don't like, I'm like, it's not, it's okay. This one, skip. I'm never going to listen to the song again.
This is on the DNR list.
Yeah, this is not going to be hearted on Spotify. I'm never going to be listening to, if I listen to this record again, it's going to be like, oh, skip. All right, we'll get right past Extraction Point. Bones Don't Rust.
Ironic for its title.
Yes, I guess that's fair. Bones Don't Rust is track 5. I think it's funny. You wrote in your notes, sounds like Steely Dan.
Yes, my dad is a big Steely Dan song, and every once in a while, I will send him a Mountain Goats track that I feel like has the influence of Steely Dan on it. John Darnielle is an avowed Steely Dan fan himself, and has done at least one Steely Dan cover, has waxed rhapsodic about their talents and abilities. There's something about the jazz influence that really sends that signal to me. I don't know if you picked up on the same thing.
I wrote in my notes, like, there's definitely Steely Dan. You said, oh, this is music my dad likes. I wrote in my notes this, dad music. This is dad music. And I mean dad music in the way, like, obviously people our age, mid to late 30s, are dads. When I describe dad music, though, I think of my dad. I think of people 30 years older than us and Steely Dan. Or Fleetwood Mac. I wrote that down.
Sure.
I also wrote down, at least at the beginning, Warren Zevon. I hear some Warren. I hear some Warren Zevon in here. Although I like Warren Zevon more than any of this song, so maybe I shouldn't. But there's definitely like jazz slash blues slash classic rock slash country in this question mark. That's all I come around to. It's just like, what is this? I don't know.
It does feel like a mishmash or sort of a cocktail of different things, which can be good sometimes. Sometimes that absolutely works. And I'll say there's elements of this one I like. It's not a bad jam. You can kind of imagine yourself sort of swaying to this one in the crowd. And I will say I think that there's more expressiveness in the vocals from John Darnielle on this track than in some of the non-punk tracks on the album. Like he's doing something here. Sometimes it's a little weird, but to your earlier comments, I will take a little weird now and again. At one point, he does sort of put on a country accent, which makes me... It was just for one line, but still kind of threw me off. It's not something I am anticipating or expecting from a Mountain Goats album. I guess Waylon Jennings Live notwithstanding. But it's not bad, but it's not for me. I think, as you said, this is kind of a Boomer Dad song, which isn't... Nothing wrong with doing that. Boomer Dads need music too, but it's not what I want from the Mountain Goats.
That's certainly true. I do not want it from them. I did not. I'm not waffling. Okay, it's a thumbs up or it's a thumbs down. This is a thumbs down. If I have to choose, if I want this, like, hey, give me more of this, or no, don't give me more of this. I prefer not to have Steely Dan. Mountain Goats. No, thank you.
I like Steely Dan songs, but I would probably give this a thumbs down too, or at least if it's in the Spotify, give me more like this or give me less like this.
Yeah. This is okay though. I don't hate this song. I think that is important too. I wanted, just because I say thumbs down doesn't mean I hate it. I hate Extraction Point. This song is fine. I can listen to this and I'll be like, it's only, you know, it's 4 minutes long and then it's over. First Blood.
It's also the kind of song I could see growing on me over time, but we'll have to let the jury stay out for that.
I don't think that's gonna. That's not gonna happen to me. I don't think so. First Blood is the next track. This is another. This again. I said this literally again. This is dad music.
This one at least feels a little more country than the last one did. There's a clearer through line to it along those lines, but I would say more than it feeling like dad rock, it feels very generic to me. It feels like a perfectly fine song, one that I would be happy to listen to. I'm not going to turn it off if it comes on the radio. There's also not one I'm in a rush to get either. I think it weirdly has some of the same tone an approach, it's Heretic Pride from the song from the album of the same name, but that's also not a comparison that does the song any favors. It seems like a watered down, more milquetoast version of Heretic Pride to me.
I really racked my brain trying to think of another genre band something to compare this to, and it felt like early rock, like Buddy Holly or like big, like that kind of thing. Like it felt like that weirdly, but with way better production, obviously, and much better instrumentation. Like it feels like, you know, this whole record is very, very thickly layered and kind of lush sounding. I think to its own detriment, I like the rawness, like I've said. But it is very lush, and the production and the instrumentation and the arrangements are all good. They're all the, like John Darnielle says in one in read an interview, he's like, I have the best backing band in indie rock. And there's a part of me that was like, maybe that's part of the problem, John Darnielle. Maybe you let those guys just kind of do what they want and you shouldn't. Maybe you should be a taskmaster and say, hey, stop jamming. the jam band comparison, I think, is also in some of these tracks here. Like both Bones Don't Rust and First Blood, I think there's a little jam band. There's like Grateful Dead.
I was going to say, John Darnielle is a renowned Deadhead, and I've got some bad news for you, Robbie.
I know.
He is not saying, you know, this isn't my thing, but the rest of you guys, go ahead and jam. You know, just you do you.
No,
this
he likes it. I know.
This is
I
his
know.
Thing. He wants to be the Grateful Dead. He wants them to evolve into the Grateful Dead and become a dad jam band. He has stated as such, or at least acknowledged as such.
Why?
So...
why?
No one. This is not something being foisted on him.
No, I know, but I really want to like. I just want to shake him. Like, come on, man. Can we? Okay, so I'm a First Blood is. I think even I like First Blood less than Bones Not Rust, and I find the theme of the lyrical themes of First Blood really interesting because it mentions like John Rambo by name and other like characters and real life people from like. Action movies and like them, what if they just don't go anywhere? What if they don't go to the action movie? And I think that's really interesting. You know, what if John Rambo never went to Vietnam? Like, I think that's like really interesting lyrical content. And I there's something like another trend that comes up, and this is a Mountain Goats thing in general, I think. I'm not sure though, because I feel like maybe it's just me and my taste in the Mountain Goats that I like, where this record, especially after those first three singles, has a lot of really dark, heavy lyrical themes mixed with very beautiful sounding music. It comes up more later on.
It's not unheard of. I don't know that it's every song, but it's certainly not unheard of for the Mountain Goats to take that approach.
No, I know. But it's just, I was just looking back and today I was listening to my favorite songs. I'm like, really thinking about it. I'm like, is it? And like most of the times it's like, no, I like the dark music with dark themes. And I don't, and that's a lot of it's just, that's just my taste. I clearly acknowledge that. Make You Suffer is the next track.
And it, for me, it feels like a weaker version of Training Montage. Like I know that they wrote and recorded these songs in a more compressed time frame. And it's not unheard of for Darnielle and company to do that, to have a more compressed writing period. I think that there was a conscious effort, from my understanding, to go back to that for this. But this feels like is the twin to Training Montage that should have been cut rather than included, because it's just almost a not as good companion to it. Thinking through bands to compare it to, it kind of sounds like a song from The Cars to me. I think I just associate the driving guitar that goes into the verses as just you're just what I needed. That just sticks in my head for it. But that said, I just don't think it's as propulsive or engrossing as some of the other early punk rock tracks on here. But has a good guitar riff in its chorus, one that I think gets repeated later in the album, which further lends to my theory that a lot of these were written around the same time. But I also feel like it's one of the ones where you start to go, okay, have I seen everything that this album is going to do? It's another song in the same idea, Make You Suffer. I'm going to leave a mark on you. I'm going to get revenge on you. Mm-hmm. The ideas are kind of repeating here. And, you know, the little riff is good. The little chorus is good. But it's fun, but feels kind of like a trifle without a lot going on for it.
I my first three words, grocery store music.
Oh, no, that's a rough thing to say, Robbie.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, this does have dark lyrics. You know, the song is called Make You Suffer. And like I was just talking about how, you know, there's, you know, kind of dark lyrical themes, but with very beautiful music. And this song, I think, is no exception. It has very beautiful instrumentation and arrangement. This music actually, like you say, The Cars, which I value The Cars, I think, more highly than you do. Because I would not compare none of the everything, like Moving in Stereo is maybe one of the best songs ever written, I think. And this is none of these tracks are that good. This music feels like, you know, Manchester Orchestra, other indie rock that were absolutely inspired by the Mountain Goats. You know, it's kind of like, or Silver Sun Pickups, or like, you know, stuff like that. And they're more, you know, in the more lyrical and kind of airy music. But I say grocery store music because it's like, it's just very pretty, but I don't really feel the weight of the themes of the lyrics. And most of the time people don't listen to lyrics in the grocery store, You know, you just hear some nice music going on while you're trying to figure out what kind of pasta you want to buy.
Candidly, I think that's true for all the one of the songs on this album. Even the ones that I like, there's not a lot that really moved me here. I think some of that is intentional. Some of it is trying to do in line with some of those action movies, maybe something not as incisive or burrowing as some of the themes that other albums have touched on. But to your point, I do think it is a recurring motif in John Darnielle's work to try to take something big and grandiose and genre, maybe even something that's written off, and find the core of humanity in it and draw that out. But it does feel, including this song, including a lot of songs on this album, that takes a backseat to, yeah, we're going to play the nice music. We're going to do something that maybe gets you out of your seat and jumps up and down or makes you appreciate the production, but we're not going to put the focus on moving you in the same way that drew me to this band originally.
I think there's there are clumps of songs on this album that I think are similar to each other, because you got the first three singles and then Extraction Point is this weird outlier. And then you have Bones Don't Rust, First Blood, and Make You Suffer. I feel like these three songs belong together. I feel like they are all akin in a weird way. They're relatively close together in construction and in the genre. Make You Suffer is a little bit more of an outlier, but you know, like you mentioned, like that kind of guitar riff, the driving guitar music with kind of a dad rock aesthetic and feeling. That's what I get from all these songs. And all three of them, I go, they're fine. This is fine.
Perfectly cromulent.
That's perfectly cromulent. Guys on every corner, right? Time for something. Are you ready for something completely different? what is this song? I don't mind it. I'll say this. This is a thumbs up for me, okay? I like this song, but it's, what is it?
It feels like the most bluesy of them. It's trying to do a funky kind of thing, which is, again,
here, let me, I have four words for you, Andrew. I want to see if you agree or disagree.
All right, let's hear it.
Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh man. I listened to a lot of Red Hot Chili Peppers when I was growing up, and this did not ping my Californication radar.
Well, it just felt like it's like a John Frusciante feels like he should be playing the riffs on this. There's also Rolling Stones mentioning the blues. It feels like Red Hot Chili Peppers meets Rolling Stones kind of feeling with saxophone.
The saxophone that made my wife, who is another Mountain Goats fan, decide like, nope, no more. I'm done. That's it. That's all the saxophone I can handle. Thank you very much. I'm gonna have a great album. I hope you guys have a great time. I'm good.
I mean, I at this point, I'm just like, I'll skip. You know, if I really am like, no, I'll skip the next time because I want to hear it all. But again, I like this song. This is a thumbs up. You replace that sax with guitar, with keyboard, with freaking flute, like it's Jethro Tull. It's this song is better if it doesn't have saxophone. I know they're not doing this. It does feel, every time the saxophone shows up, it feels like they're playing a prank on me.
On you specifically.
Oh yeah.
Like you were like this song, Robbie. You were on this, and then boom,
saxophone. I'm like, what are you doing? What is this? It's a joke. The saxophone is a joke instrument. It's the year 2022. What was that? The house core band that I liked for a bit. I forget. They have a saxophone and I'm fine with that. But that's dance music, really. I think this music is interesting. Guys in every corner. Again, there's urgency in John's vocals here. I think that is a big thing about me enjoying a non-good song. I want to feel urgency. You know, I want to feel like there's I want to feel threat. I think that's another thing that is missing with his nicer delivery. Like I'll say that, like it's more professional delivery, I guess. Is it doesn't feel like I'm being threatened. And I kind of like that. I like the threat there. I like music that is a little like the vocalist is a bit like, hey, it's a little scary, huh?
Ironic because so many of these songs are about somebody making threats.
Yeah, exactly.
They're really like, I'm gonna leave a mark on you. I've got guys on every corner who are gonna come after you. We've got hostages and there's bullets. Like, there is a lot of threatening imagery and descriptiveness here, but not a lot that comes through. At least on the back three quarters of the album.
No, I want that. I think that's another problem, Andrew. Like. It feels like I made the connection to when I was talking about earlier about I don't feel the, you know, the lyrics are kind of, it's beautiful music, but the, and the lyrics are dark, but then you have John singing very nicely. And it's like, it feels like Los Campesinos a little bit, where they oftentimes have, you know, dark lyrical themes, but it's like sung like happy go, you know, pop music. And that feels like this is where it's like it's starting to like, oh yeah, it's a lot of these songs are, it's dark and the lyrics are dark and but the music is beautiful and the songs are sung very sweet and kindly, and you're like, I don't like that dissonance, especially in this. Guys in Every Corner is, again, I would give it a thumbs up. It's right above that line, the Mendoza line here, the Mountain Goes Mendoza line. I'll take it. I'll take weird, funky Rolling Stones, whatever the heck this is. I don't know what it is, but it's interesting.
It's another one that I think might grow on me over time, where when you first hear it, you go, this is weird. And as in terms of threatening songs, as threatening songs go, this is not For an Object. This is not Sold Out. This is not Werewolf Gimmick, with the caveat that you and I are probably uniquely susceptible to a Mountain Goats pro wrestling concept album.
I re-listen to Beat the Champ. And if it wasn't a wrestling album, I wouldn't like it.
Really?
I think so.
I love that album. And my wife is not a big wrestling fan, and she will very kindly watch with me now and again, but still digs that album.
I mean, your wife's a cop. She doesn't like the Acclaimed. This is the rules. I didn't make them up. The next track, Hostages. Again, very weird, different thing. Chris Isaac. You wrote Chris Isaac. I wrote Chris Isaac.
Yeah.
This sounds like Chris Isaac.
I don't want to fall in love with you or something.
Yeah. You're like, what is going on?
I literally wrote down, what are we doing?
It is that. It's like, and I don't know. I don't like Hostages. This is my second least favorite track, I think, on this record. There is no chorus. It just never happens. I don't know.
There's a tagline. It's got a chorus, but it's a one chorus, which is true for a lot of the album.
I'm another Mountain Goats opinion. I like Mountain Goats when John Darnielle writes kind of structured pop music, you know, like the formula that a lot of pop music follows. And rock music and all popular music, not pop music and specifically pop music, but popular music. You know, you have a verse, chorus, bridge, solo, whatever. Like, yeah, like there's variations on the theme, obviously. But I think the strongest Mountain Goats songs and my favorite Mountain Goats songs mostly follow that stuff. Sometimes there's outliers and there's exceptions that prove the rule. This song is just kind of it's just like a lot of airy hauntingness, and there's nothing that gets, and like the themes are really interesting. I love the idea of like, oh yes, we can run out of bullets, we'll never run out of hostages. Like those, like it's really interesting. Again, like the lyrics are good, but again, the music is contrary to the lyrics, and John Darnielle's delivery is contrary to the lyrics, and we never get a punch. Like I'm ready for the hit. I want a gut punch, like to really nails that theme home. Like, give me a dark, a twist of the knife, and it's just not there. It just feels like, it's shoegaze. That's what I think. This is shoegaze. I don't like shoegaze.
I can see that.
I don't like shoegaze.
I can see that. If nothing else, it doesn't need to be 7 minutes long. If it was half this long, I think I might feel differently about
probably,
it.
Maybe yeah.
It might go into the perfectly cromulent bucket, as opposed to the, please, like, why are you giving me this sonic wallpaper for 7 minutes? Also, no. I feel like it's worth noting, I think, I could be wrong, I need to listen to them side to side. It seems like the chorus uses the exact same riff from Make You Suffer. And maybe that's intentional. Maybe he's trying to draw out some common themes there, and it uses the same sort of driving guitar. But it just sort of struck me as odd. Like, wait a minute, I just heard that. I'm not going crazy, am I?
I honestly stopped paying attention, Andrew, to the song after a minute or two, because it's just droning. It's the same. There's never anything. It's just... I like doom gaze music, which is shoegaze mixed with doom metal, because you have the punctuation of the heavy in contrast to the kind of airy and floaty nature of shoegaze. I do not just like shoegaze, though. I get bored. Thumbs down. I'm a big thumbs down on Hostages. I don't like it. Need More Bandages is next. I have mixed feelings about this one. I think I'm a thumbs up. I'm an Orange Cassidy thumbs up on this one.
Lackadaisical thumbs
up. Yeah, you're just like, it's like, okay, I'll take it. I'll take it, I think, is where I'm at. You say generic rock in your notes, and I didn't at first. I'm like, is it? I'm like, I like it and well enough. Like, I think just because it has some energy, and it came right after Hostages, which felt like it had very little energy. But then I wrote down, like, it feels like Queens of the Stone Age or Foo Fighters. So I guess I agree with you.
It does feel very Foo Fighters to me. I think that's a good touchstone for it. And I don't know. I'm not going to get too controversial here, but it feels like a song that any band in the world could have done. What I come to the Mountain Goats for is things that are distinctive, which means sometimes you do get those weird experiments that don't feel like they are necessarily super successful, but you get stuff and you're like, nope, this is John Darnielle, this is John Worster, this is Peter Hughes, this is Matt Douglas, and they are doing the thing that they do that is different from what everybody else does. And if you told me that this was a song that they were covering from another band, that they had done at a state fair, I would 100% believe you. There's nothing remarkable about it. Yeah, sure, I would put it in the cromulent pile because there's not anything bad about it. There's not anything that actively makes me go, oh, why would you do that? But it's just a one big shrug of a song, which is, God, not the last thing that I would describe most Mountain Goat songs with.
I think I give it a thumbs up because it is more up tempo, and I needed it after Hostages. I think honestly is the only, like, the track order was different, I might be more tepid on Need More Bandages. I think it's fine. It's fine. It's not, will I listen to it again? Probably, but I will it be like, you know, is this a great song? I think if it was in like one of my favorite Mountain Goats records, I'd be like, what is this? This isn't that good. But now, in contrast to some of the songs in this one, right? I think there is a part of that like anthemic, like you can yell the chorus, and at a certain point, I'm just like, please, there is a chorus I can recognize. You know, I think that's what I got to. Incandescent Ruins.
John Darnielle trying to put on his cowboy hat, put on his boots, and do his best country twang about a sci-fi song. So, you know,
here's my very brief notes on Incandescent Ruins. Country song, John Denver? ? No thanks.
See, you know what? I'm going to give this one a thumbs up.
Okay, all right.
It's kind of a novelty song, but it's interesting. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It is up tempo. If you like Waylon Jennings Live, which is one that has grown on me, I think you would appreciate this one as well. Is it something I want a lot of from John Darnielle and the Mountain Goats? Probably not, but you know, one song like this on the album, if everything else were more in line with the first three songs, I think I would like this a lot more. I think it would be like, okay, this is a bit of a... calling it a palate cleanser seems like damning it with faint praise. But I could see sort of bobbing along to this one. I would, if this one came on the radio or came in my mix, I'd be like, yeah, let's leave that one on.
I don't hate this song, but it doesn't feel like much to me. It feels like it needs, also I don't understand how it belongs on this record. When you have the songs leading up to this are Bones Don't Rust, First Blood, Make You Suffer, Guys on Every Corner, Hostages, Need More Bandages, and then after it, Bleed Out. And then all right in this run is Incandescent Ruins, I'm Not About, like, weird, like, artifacts, science fiction? I don't know what's actually happening. I've not read the lyrics. I've thought about it, but I'm like, I don't need to do that for this. I feel like I want to reflect a more casual listening experience. I'm not going to be listening. Like, I didn't look up the lyrics for most of these songs. All I just got was like, this is like, it is like John Denver singing about aliens or something. Like, I don't know what's going on. And like, again, I think if there was a music video that was like kind of funny, I would like this song.
I will say it draws the distinction between this and something like Hostages because it's 2.5 minutes.
Yes, so, that is, you know, that is an advantage.
Puzzle over it a minute. My best guess is maybe it was something related to Terminator or Blade Runner. Those were the two ones that popped into my head as inspiration.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, you know, it's 2.5 minutes. It's peppy. It has some interesting lines. It's sort of making you go, huh, what is he going for there? You could do worse.
I think the other problem is, Andrew, my country music is not my kinds of country music is not like this. There's two kinds of country music I like, and this is not in either of them. So this is not the kind I would listen to on my own. So it doesn't make it necessarily better when John Darnielle is singing it. He does. Yes, it is. I don't hate it. I think it's fine. If I was playing the record, I would just let it, I would let the song play. I would go like, again, you said it's 2.5 minutes. Not a big deal. It's not 7 minutes long. Why on earth? Speaking of 7 minute long songs, we have the last song on the record, Bleed Out.
I'm going to be a little overdramatic here, Robbie, if you will indulge me.
Okay.
This is the only song on the appropriately titled Bleed Out that feels of a piece with prior Mountain Goat songs to me. And I'm certainly overstating that because I've already made comparisons to other Mountain Goat songs. But this is, whether it's because of the lyrical quality, which is a little wry and ironic, but also kind of dark and resigned in its way, whether it's the sort of, you know, you have that line about children end up just like me, which feels like one of those softly devastating lines that John Darnielle puts into play. There's just something about this one that plays like something I could hear on Get Lonely or something I could hear on one of the later albums that wouldn't be out of step. There's something here, and maybe it's just the lyrics. I think at the end of the day, it probably comes down to the lyrics. That seems more like the Mountain Goats than anything else on this album to me. So I'm glad for it. I know it's 7 minutes. I know it's a long one. It's not the first long Mountain Goats song. And I think he uses that time and space to fill it sonically and lyrically. So I got a lot of appreciation for this one. This was, if you did a version of Bleed Out that was just the first three tracks plus this one, I think I would be a happy camper if that was an EP.
I have mixed feelings about this song. I think I liked it a lot the first time I listened, and I liked it a lot less the second time I listened. I don't know really why. I wrote down Tom Waits. This feels like a Tom Waits song. But obviously, it changes a lot. A Tom Waits song changes a lot when it's not Tom Waits singing it. Like, is that distinctive drawl, gravel that is Tom Waits without him singing the song, obviously it changes a lot. I think the second time I listened to it, I didn't like it as much because I think I'm again pulled away by that. The music is so pretty and this is John Darnielle kind of singing, you know, and I don't want him to sing. I want him to yell or yelp. I want him to yowl like a cat. I want him to, you know, belt. And it's not there. And I don't attach to lyrics on my first couple listens of most songs. Mountain Goat songs, generally they come out over time and then I kind of appreciate the songs more, but they do have to hook me at first with music. And I feel like this song doesn't have a hook musically. It feels very atmospheric.
It's a laid-back groove, but I also think there's a lot of that in the Mountain Goat's discography. I don't think it's that different from Wild Sage, which is kind of a laid-back, grooving sort of song, or Tianji Lake Monster, which is another sort of relaxed, John Darnielle is singing, not belting, singing on those kinds of things. It's in that vein for me, so I think that's part of why it works. It does feel different than some of that, like, intense, especially I'm going to go into the bridge and howl my head off kind of presentation, but I don't think it's so out of step with what the band does otherwise, and I appreciate it. It's different. I think I wrote down, it kind of feels a little bit Jimmy Buffett-esque, which is not something I naturally associate with this band, but I don't know. The recurring titular bleed out comments, I think, is the hook musically, and I think that did enough to get me going.
It's too long. I don't need 7 minutes. I think that's another thing. And I think that's a part of it. Stuff. This is just me kind of figuring out, and which everyone does, what they like, what they don't like, and what they like and don't like in particular bands. And I like the Mountain Goats when they're 3 to 4 minutes long. I think I like those are the songs I like. I don't need set. I feel like, I don't know. I think something I'm also less forgiving of now than I was when I was younger, where I go, why does it need to be 7 minutes? Is there like hard lyrics you needed to get in those last couple of minutes, John Darnielle, that you couldn't include in the first five? Like, why isn't the song 5 minutes long? Is there like, it's essential? I'm like, feels like you're masturbating. I don't know. I'm less, that's me again. I feel like I'm less permissive of that. I'm like, get it. Someone edit this. Come on. Edit this, please. Someone. Cut this stuff out. No one wants this. Which isn't true. There's plenty of people who want it.
And I'll compromise. I don't think you can't ever do it, but I think you get one per album. Okay, you get one song. You get one track. You get to experiment. You get to go long. You get to run into whatever musical territory you want to. But two, you've gone too far.
This song is the exact same length as Hostages.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, Hostages and the song are both 7 minutes and 9 seconds long. Extraction Point is 5 minutes long. I think we're getting like, oh, look, all these songs, are these really long songs are the songs I dislike the most. I think we're figuring something out, Andrew. That's the last song of the album. I think it is appropriate for the last song of the album. It is kind of, it feels even like, I know it's fun, like, you say Jimmy Buffett, this song feels like a dirge to me. It feels kind of funerary, which is another a genre that I discovered not just recently. Funerary is an actual metal or rock subgenre. It's more rock, really, than metal. Kind of Black Sabbath-y funerary music. It feels like that, even though the music necessarily doesn't line up. But I think the lyrical themes, especially Bleed Out, I think it connects back to that, where it feels like you're listening to someone die effectively.
Yeah, there's an elegiac tone to it. I like that about it. It feels that this isn't the first song from the Mountain Goats to be about contemplating one's end, which perhaps is what makes it feel more at home to the inveterate Mountain Goats fan.
That is it for the tracks on Bleed Out. I think I would say that I actively like less than half of the tracks on this album.
I would agree with that. I think the first three and the last one are the ones that I'm, you know, really actively into and would want to put in the regular rotation. And there's probably four, maybe five more that I'd say, yeah, you know, that can be a part of the canon, not to go to your other show. I'd still listen to that if that came on. And then a few where I'm like, oh boy, I'm not sure what you're doing here. I don't know. I can follow you where you want to go, John.
I say that. where I go, I less than half the songs I would listen to on their own, or, you know, add to the canon, as you would say. But I still, I think I'm still positive on this record in the long run. I'm still like, if someone told me, is that new Mountain Goats record good? I would say it's worth listening to. I like it. I like the record, even if I like less than half the tracks actively, because it is maybe I'm just a sucker. Maybe I am a mark. This is, I have hope. I have hope that we will get less Grateful Dead and less whatever, you know, the, all these weird idiosyncrasies that the Mountain Goats have become in the past 5 years. And maybe we'll get, like, if the next album they release, which might will probably be next year, because they are pumping them out lately. I'm like, if the next album is the same ratio, where I get a handful of bangers that I really, really like, and then a couple songs, most record I go, eh, it's fine, and then a couple songs that I hate, I think I would take that ratio 100% of the time. We're in season 33 of The Simpsons, is what I'm saying, Andrew.
That's not a comparison anybody wants to live up to, Robbie.
I mean, fortunately, John Darnielle's never going to listen to this, because he doesn't care. so I'm not concerned, just like Al Jean's never going to listen to my Simpsons podcast. John Darnielle is not going to listen to this podcast. And even if he did, I don't think he would care. He is an adult man who's very successful and kind of writes what he wants and does what he wants. I don't think he's going to care about me grousing about, you know, Extraction Point and saxophones. Even though, John Darnielle, if you're listening, please, no more saxophones. Please, please stop anything but more saxophones. I'm okay with that. You know, that's where my expectations are, because it's like the point where, like, yeah, they've released four albums now in a row where I was like, I don't like this. This isn't for me. And then they release one and I go, oh, some of this is for me. I'll take that.
I agree. It's a step in the right direction. There's a lot of the tracks on here that I really like. And, the ones that I like are ones that are very high up for me, which is a good thing. And we were talking about this earlier. I'm still excited to go see them live. Partly because I want to hear them play some of the old music, but partly because I think some of these songs are going to completely kick our asses live. And so if that's what we get out of it, if we get, hey, this is going to enhance the live experience, which to the Grateful Dead point, I think is where the Mountain Goats in general are trending toward, this is not a bad album to have in the repertoire.
I when you texted me, literally, my wife had asked not 10 minutes prior. She's like, hey, do you want to go see the Mountain Goats? I'm like, I mean, I've seen them live. And they played lots of most of my favorite songs. I don't need to see them again to feel complete in my life. But I'm like, how many songs from Goths are they going to play? Or how many songs off of Getting Into Knives are they going to play? How many In League With, God forbid, In League With Dragons are they going to play? Which I think is the worst of all these recent albums. I think In League With Dragons is the worst one, which is incredibly insane to me. If you told me, if I travel back in time, you told me, hey, like after Beat the Champ, let's say Beat the Champ came out and then I travel back in time, told myself, hey, Robbie, John Darnielle and the Mountain Goats, they're going to write a song that's fantasy themed. It's going to be called In League With Dragons. I'd be like, oh my God, that's going to be great. No. But I wanted to circle back around. So I feel like this is, I don't mention Simpsons season 33 for no reason, Andrew. I feel like this is what life is now.
Oh, I don't know if I'm willing to reconcile myself with that, Rob.
Where I am making peace with the fact that things I love are not going to be always the things I love. They're going to change over time, and there's nothing I can do about it. However, I can enjoy the parts of them that are still the thing I like, and the parts that I don't like, it's okay if they're not the thing I like. And I don't feel that way about season 20 Simpsons, because it's abysmal. But season 33 Simpsons, last season of The Simpsons, was, I think, the right ratio where I go, maybe not all of it's good, but there is a lot of good in it. And it's the same way with The Mountain Goats, where it's like, I love these things, and they're not, I don't know if they're ever going to be the thing I love again. Time makes fools of us all, as a philosopher once said. And I think I'm okay with Mountain Goats doing this album again, you know, or doing something similar where it's just like, oh yeah, not all the tracks, and circling back around at the very beginning, do I feel cheated that the rest of the album isn't like those three singles? No, I'm a little disappointed, but that's okay. That's okay.
That's a very mature attitude, Robbie, and I legitimately commend you for it, because it's true. We have to accept that the things that we enjoyed are not always going to stay that way, and it's not even necessarily good for them to stay that way. Things need to change and evolve. To reference another television program that both of us like, everything stays, but it still changes, and changing is good, and it doesn't mean that the thing is gone or that we can't appreciate what it is or where it was. That said, I will throw this out there. I agree with you. I like this album. I think I'm totally okay if this is the standard of quality that we get from the Mountain Goats for the foreseeable future. I'm up for it. It's certainly an improvement over some of the previous albums that we've gotten. There's songs here that I can really rock out to. There's songs here that really, really pierce me. Not that there aren't a handful of them on other albums as well. But that fact notwithstanding, this is the little bit of hope in my heart. The Mountain Goats has pretty consistently evolved as a band. From the time that it was just John Darnielle with his boombox, from the time that it was John Darnielle and Rachel Ware making music together, from the time that we went from the boombox era to the studio album era, from going to that to adding Worcester to the band, from doing that to adding Matt Douglas to the band. The sound has changed and evolved. The lyrical content has changed and evolved. The themes have changed and evolved over time. It has certainly gone in a direction that is not to my liking over the last 5 years or so. And I think when I wrote my review for Consequence of Sound, I think I ended up saying about Goss, let's hope it's just a phase. Well, here we are 5 years later, and it has not been. But undoubtedly, the band is going to change again. And I think you saw on, at least for me, Songs for Pierre Chauvin, some of that fire is there. Some of that rough and tumble, hard scrabble, more authentic, raw, atavistic stuff is buried in this stuff somewhere. One of these days it's going to come out, or one of these days it's going to be channeled in a direction that I really like again. I still have faith in these people as artists. I still have faith in John Darnielle as a lyricist and somebody who challenges himself to make new and different art. And I have a fervent hope that one day that new direction is going to lead him back to me.
Hope, it's the best of things.
It is.
Unless you subscribe to the other, you know, hope is dangerous. It's deadly. It'll kill you.
No.
I don't.
Hope is frail, but it's hard to kill.
Oh, like people. Just like people, which is appropriate for this album. I think that's about it, Andrew. Anything else you want to talk about, mention before we go?
No, I think that covers it.
What would you like to plug? Plug away.
I'll start by saying thank you for having me on, as always. It's fun to have an emergency impromptu podcast when we have a new Mountain Goats album coming off. So thank you for that. Folks can find my writing anywhere from all across the web at my website, theandrewblog.net. Can also find me on Twitter at theandrewblog. Most of my writing these days is happening at The Spool. TheSpool.net, you can find my reviews of the final season of Better Call Saul, which was excellent, and there's a lot to dig into there. And also, you can see me reviewing all things Star Trek, Robbie's favorite. So please come check me out there. Again, find me on Twitter at TheAndrewBlog, three words, TheAndrewBlog, and, you know, keep on listening.
I like Strange New Worlds.
Strange New Worlds was great.
I like it. You know what? All they had to do was literally just release one Star Trek show that felt like Star Trek, even if it's not perfect. And I go, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. So I don't care about Discovery or Picard or any of that garbage. But I don't need to. It's fine. You have a show for me now, so you can keep do your garbage over there with with your space ninjas or whatever, your eye trauma. I don't like, they just keep doing that. Whatever. Yeah, you should guys do all that stuff Andrew just said. You go to follow those. He's a great writer. You should go read his stuff and follow him on the internets. This is a good thing to do. That'll do it for us today. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Robbie.
You can find me on Twitter at Robbie Dorman. My website is robbiedorman.com. You find links there for all my other podcasts and for my horror novels. I'd love you to go check them out. Find them on Amazon or wherever you buy your books. Until next time, thanks for being a fan.